This is KZSC 88.1 FM, KZSC.org, broadcasting from the University of California at Santa Cruz. My name is John Malkin, and this is Transformation Highway. Santa Cruz, California is the first city in the state to remove the El Camino Real bells that were placed here in the early 1900s. Hundreds of these tall bell markers line what is now Highway 101, up California's beautiful coastline. The bells were originally placed to encourage people to travel around California via automobile, which had recently become available, and visit Catholic missions from San Diego to San Francisco. The bells were meant to symbolize what was a fictitious, symbiotic relationship between the Spanish conquestors and the dozens of indigenous tribes that they enslaved and brutally forced to convert to Christianity. 21 Spanish missions were founded between 1769 and 1833. Mission Santa Cruz was founded on August 28, 1791, and three mission bells were later placed in the city limits. In 2019, Valentin Lopez, chair of the Amamutzin tribal band, contacted the city to ask that all three bells be removed. In 2019, the bell located on the campus of the University of California at Santa Cruz was removed. The second mission bell was removed during a Black Lives Matter march on June 11, 2020, by activists. In November 2020, the Santa Cruz Historic Preservation Commission unanimously passed a recommendation to the City Council to remove the one remaining mission bell, which is located at the corner of Socal and Dakota Avenues in downtown Santa Cruz. At the time, Santa Cruz Director of Parks and Recreation, Tony Elliott, said that the bells represent genocide of the local Native population. In October 2020, the City Council approved a resolution to update the city's historic district to provide, quote, a more accurate depiction of the history of the indigenous people of the area. More information about the brutal history of the Spanish missions, the local indigenous rebellion against the Spanish, and the movement to remove the bells is available online at removethebells.org. And there's a virtual bell exhibit at the California Parks website at parks.ca.gov/virtual-bell-exhibit. A ceremony to remove the final bell in Santa Cruz is being held on Saturday, August 28th at 1 p.m. at Mission Plaza Park. At 3 p.m., there will be a one-mile procession to the location of the bell at the corner of Socal and Dakota, where the bell will be removed. The day's events will be live streamed as well. The Remove the Bell ceremony is being hosted by the Amamutzin Tribal Band, and speakers will include local historian Marty Rizzo, Mayor Donna Myers, and representatives from the Esalen, Ohlone, Tataviam, Amamutzin, and other local tribes. Valentin Lopez, chair of the Amamutzin Tribal Band, will also be a featured speaker. And today, you'll hear my interview with Valentin coming up next. Again, the Santa Cruz Bell Removal Ceremony is happening in person and online on Saturday, August 28th at 1 p.m. at Mission Plaza Park, followed by a procession and the 3 p.m. removal of the bell in front of the Hindquarters Restaurant on the corner of Socal and Dakota in downtown Santa Cruz. Here now is Valentin Lopez. You know, I'd love for you to talk about the bells and what they represent and why they were put up and when they were put up and why you'd like to be taking them down. And of course, I noticed in 2019 when the bell at UCSC was removed, and then in 2020, when during a Black Lives Matter march, when the bell at the Mission was removed. And, you know, tell me a little about the bells and what they represent and why they were put up.
The Mission bells are meant to recognize the history of the missions in California, but that history has never been truthfully told. The way it's presented is, you know, it was a loving, peaceful time, but the Indians came to the missions voluntarily. That they came to find a better life, that they came to learn agriculture, and that they came to find God. And that story there, that history there, is an absolute lie. We're saying that we're not, you know, that we're going to insist that the true history of the California Mission period and the other, and the true history of the other mission period, the other California periods, the Mexican period and the California American periods, we want that history to be told as well. You know, when people learn about the history of California, it all starts with the missions, as if that's, you know, when the Indians came into existence. But the history of the indigenous people of California, the California Indians, that started 15, 20,000 years ago or more. And we say, since time immemorial, that we've been here. And that history has never been told. We've never been looked at as human beings. We've never looked at as having any purpose or benefit. You know, we've been compared to like just another another species of wildlife here in California. You know, and then the treatment of the Indians has been horrible. You know, when I talk about the mission history, I always say the history of the missions did not start when the Spanish came in 1769. The history of the missions period started in 1453 when the Pope Alexander, I believe it was, issued a papal bull that said all indigenous people are heathens, pagans, and savages. That indigenous people have no soul. And that's a really important one. Because if you have no soul, you're not a human being. But, you know, the church does not recognize you as a human being if you do not have a soul. That's what makes human beings different from everything else. And so since we didn't have a soul, we weren't human beings. So they can enslave us, they can kill us, they can rape us, they can torture us, do whatever they want. And it wasn't a sin. The papal bulls also said that all indigenous people are the enemies of Jesus Christ. That the indigenous people should be put into perpetual slavery. And that the property and the possessions of the indigenous people should be taken from them. Well, when you take a look at the history of indigenous people around the world, that is exactly what happened. And then, in 1493, there was another papal bull issued. And that papal bull was known as the Doctrine Christians. And that papal bull also said that if the indigenous people refused to that conversion, to be the citizens of that country and to be Christians, that they were to be killed. I mean, that's a directive from the Pope, saying that indigenous people were to be killed if they did not accept that conversion. And that is just brutal. And that's what they did. They went around the world, and they started first to Africa, and they captured blacks and sold them into slavery. But they were not human beings. So there was no moral consideration needed about what did that mean, or how does that affect their soul? And then also, the more they went to India, then they went to Indonesia, and then the Philippines, and then they came to the Americas, and they came into California in 1769. But by that time, they had already perfected the best ways to force that conversion, to become, in this case, citizens of Spain, and to become Christians. And that was, there was a mission system. And for the mission system, it was enslavement. Indians did not go to the missions voluntarily. Indians did not go there to find a better life, to find God, to learn agriculture. Indians had, had a very long and intense and history of governance. They had a strong culture. They had very strong spiritual beliefs, etc. And yet they were looked at as not being human beings by the Pope and such. Let's see one more thing about the papal bulls and that doctrine of discovery before I moved on. In 1823, there was a Supreme Court decision. It's referred to as the McIntosh decision. And the McIntosh decision, Supreme Court decision, says that the doctrine of discovery shall be the law of the lands for the United States. And that right there was the foundation of the land use laws in the United States. But let's remember that the doctrine of discovery says that if the people don't assimilate, they were to be killed. And that's why all the massacres, the Indian massacres, and the Indian killings, and the treatment of the Indians and stuff like that, was allowed, because the Indians were not human beings, according to the church, and according to the European countries that were doing the conquest or the discoveries. That's a really important part of the history that's never told. And so now they're back to the mission bells. You know, whenever they would build a mission, they always had a bell there, and that bell was meant to control them. It would ring in the morning when it's time to get up. It would ring when it's time to go to work. It would ring when it's time to break for lunch, to go back to lunch. It would ring at dinner time. It would ring at in the evening time before you went. It would ring when it was time for them to say prayers. They were controlled by those bells. It was just a way of controlling and dominating the California Indians. And then in 1910, that's when the automobile was coming out, and they wanted to really do a lot to promote California for tourism. And so that's when they developed those mission bells, as a sign to come and visit the mission bells and learn the history of the missions and see how beautiful and peaceful these places were, and see how easy it was for the Indians. I mean, how wonderful it was for the Indians to come to this peaceful, happy place. It doesn't talk about, like in San Juan Bautista, the mission that I descend from, that 19,421 Indians died as of 1823, there was still another 10 years. years of the mission period to go. So there was a lot more depth than that, in that one mission. Then 84 different tribes were taken to mission, San Juan Bautista. And those, many of those, most, just about all of those missions, all of those tribes today are extinct. The Indians that went to Santa Cruz had the life expectancy in Santa Cruz was less than 2 years. That the priests, that Santa Cruz was the most brutal of all missions. There was a father there, Father Quintana. He was very sadistic. He would just beat the Indians mercilessly. And then, one time he got the whip, and he started putting barbs on the whip. It's like barbed wire. He started putting barbs on the whip. So whenever he would whip the Indians, it would tear their flesh. And he was making that whip and putting the barbs on it in front of all the other Indians. And he was just putting fear and terror into them. And then right after he started using that whip, the Indians killed him. And they also pressed his testicles, interestingly. You know, because it's reported that he also would sexually abuse the Indians. And they say that one of the reasons that the Indians killed him is that he raped the wife of a chief that has been brought in. And he did that to show power and domination over that chief and over that Indian. These are the stories of the Indians that are never told. And so now that when they start wanting to promote these bells in 1910, to make the missions at these wonderful places, and continue telling a false history, a false, lying history, about how beautiful and peaceful and loving the missions were. You know, our tribe said, no, we're not going to allow that. The truth has got to be told about this. And that's why we have this campaign now to remove the bells, not only in Santa Cruz, but all of the mission bells on state lands in California. As you probably know, those mission bells, are pretty prevalent on the El Camino Real, which is now known as Highway 101. You know, they have those mission bells every mile, mile and a half on both sides of the road. And just to glorify, bring glory to the mission period and to a false history and to talk about how the wonderful brave people who first came to California to settle it. We're not going to let that happen. We're going to have a strong event, a large event in Santa Cruz on August 28th when they remove the bell there. And also, we're going to continue that campaign in California until all the mission bells on government property. Initially, we're going to go to the states, to the state of California, and try to get them to remove the bells on the El Camino Real, and then try to get other communities to remove the bells, the mission bells that are in their city limits, that are on public property, and get those bells removed. But why we don't, you know, it's wrong to give us a constant reminder every mile, every mile.
This is KZSC 88.1 FM, KZSC.org. My name is John Malkin, and this program is called Transformation Highway. You're listening to an interview with Valentin Lopez, chair of the Amamutsin Tribal Band, on the removal of the California Mission bells. The third and last bell in Santa Cruz will be removed at 3 p.m. on Saturday, August 28th, following a 1 p.m. ceremony at Mission Plaza Park. For more details, go to removethebells.org. Here again is Valentin Lopez. Val, is the last bell in Santa Cruz is going to be removed? Is that bell up at the mission or at the church?
This is actually on Soquel Avenue at Dakota, on the inside of that bar and restaurant known as Hindquarters. There's a bell right there, but that right there is on public property, so that's the bell that's going to be removed. Santa Cruz had three bells, one at the campus, one at Mission Plaza, which was taken down, and the third one is now at Soquel, Dakota.
For many years, there have been some movements to remove these kinds of symbols, and the last 2 years since the pandemic started, and then George Floyd was killed, and a lot of other young brown and black people were killed by police, the movement, the Black Lives Matter movement, and other social justice movements have really expanded hugely. And there are more people now, it seems, around the world calling for this kind of action, to remove symbols of slavery, of genocide, of brutality. And earlier this year in February, there were discussions in Watsonville about removing a statue of George Washington from the park in Watsonville. George Washington owned a lot of slaves, and the discussion was about removing that statue. It was quite a heated debate. Some people arguing that if you remove the statue, the symbol of the slavery, that people will forget that history. And I think what the committee decided to do was remove the statue, but put it somewhere like a library or a museum with a plaque explaining the history of George Washington and his participation in slavery. What do you think about this argument that if we remove these symbols, like the bells, that it removes the history?
Yeah,
and I also think about this huge statue of Junipero Serra that's up towards San Francisco and him pointing down at the ground. I don't know if there's any movement to remove that.
We have written letters about that, and we're, you know, and we would like to start a campaign on that. But we, that's not our territory, so we can't speak for other tribes' territory. And that's what the issue is, not the issue, but that's what's happening there.
Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned, these bells extend all the way down California along the Camino Real, the 101. Is Santa Cruz the first place to remove bells?
Santa Cruz is the first city to be removing the bells, yes.
So tell me, I mean, how cooperative has city council people and other people in Santa Cruz been about removing the bells?
The city of Santa Cruz has been very supportive. They passed a resolution to approve the removal of the bells. And that was by a unanimous vote. And so the city of Santa Cruz, as I said, is very supportive. We first met with the city in 2017 or 2018 to talk about the removal of the bells. And so what we're asking, what's going to happen on the 28th is, you know, kind of like a long time coming in that regard, because, you know, we started talking about it a while back, but then we had the fires, and then we had the flu, and then we had to have a number of meetings with the council members and staff, et cetera, and they had to do research on how the bells came about and who supported them, and let them know about our efforts to take them down and to see if, you know, what, you know, how they felt about it and stuff like that. So it took a while to get to where the city then was comfortable in approving the removal of the bells. We wanted to do it that way versus a protest or just ripping down the bells. And all this have directed us that we're not, they don't want, really, that we're not allowed to do that. And we have to do it in a respectful way. And so that's what we're doing.
Yeah, it sounds good to do it that way and to have a ceremony that people can come to and participate in. And it can be, I don't know, something that involves the community and involves music and involves kind of grieving in a way, you know, this history and this action to take to recognize that history that's really awful.
On August 27th, the day before, the Friday before, there is an event happening at the State Museum at the Mission. And for the past 2 years, Jenna Napolitano, who was the president of the University of California system, she gave $1 million grant to study the true history of the missions. And with that $1 million grant, they gave smaller grants to researchers so they can research and get the information out there into the public. And that two-year research period is coming to an end now. And so there's going to be a conference in Northern California and a conference in Southern California. And so on August 27th, that's going to be the conference for Northern California. And so a lot of scholars are going to come in the day before and talk about the true history of the missions. and its impact, and its short-term and long-term impact. And we'll be talking about a lot of different elements about the history. And some of those speakers will talk at our event as well on the mission period. So it's time for the truth to be told. And it's going to make a lot of people uncomfortable. We know that. But our tribe, we have been working on tribal wellness for going on 13 years now. And one thing that we, one thing at our tribal wellness meetings that we talked about is how to have healthy relationships. And it says to have healthy relationship takes two healthy people or two healthy partners or two healthy entities. Well, how healthy is the state of California if they can't tell the truth about our history? How healthy is the city and the counties if they can't tell the true history of California Indians in the school system? And if they continue to allow our sacred and cultural sites being destroyed for development, how healthy are they? How healthy are they if they ignore, to put the feet in the ground every morning when they wake up, and they're putting the ground on land that was stolen from the indigenous people, and they just ignore that and don't acknowledge that? How healthy are they? So if people want ever healthy relationships with indigenous people, they have to recognize that they have a lot of healing too. Perpetrators have probably more healing to do than the indigenous people do. That they were the ones that were responsible for those atrocious acts. And they must heal from that. And we, until they heal from it, we're not interested in having a relationship with them. So that goes down another path, but that's another part of this. Moving the mission vows is part of a healing process, a very important healing process. And we have to acknowledge that.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting to me what you're saying, and it's really a deeper part of this process. The bells are very symbolic, but the healing of the perpetrators and the, those of us who have come since the perpetrators, the healing of our culture and the healing also of the people who suffered, that all has to happen. And I'm wondering now, when I'm hearing you talk about that, if you have looked at other places on the planet where similar things have happened, and unfortunately there's lots of examples, but other places where there's been genocide and slavery and religious tyranny, if you found places where they've done this well, and you can kind of model it on that. I don't know. Sometimes people talk about South Africa and their reconciliation program, which I'm not sure how well that actually went. One could talk about how well or not well people in Germany have learned about and coped with the history of Nazism and the genocide there. I don't know if you've learned anything from other experiments with healing from this kind of pain.
Well, let me say something first. You said that, I think, yourself, that you came after those atrocities. Therefore, I wasn't part of it, therefore I have no responsibility to it. You didn't say that. But too many times, part of it, so I'm good. You know, what we say is you have to rec. It's true that you perhaps you weren't there, you know, collecting bounty money or paying bounty money or participating in expeditions to exterminate Indians or, you know, enslaving or raping Indians. But you have to recognize that you benefit greatly from that history. You benefit greatly. And every day you put your feet on ground that is stolen, as I said. And every day you're riding your car on roads that were paved over village sites, sacred sites, prayer sites, fishing sites, hunting sites. And there's no thought to the indigenous people that were here before. You know, we don't ask, we know it's not your responsibility. But what we ask, and this goes right along with the healing, we ask that all people recognize how they benefited greatly from that period. And today the indigenous people are asking you to help us. Help us restore our culture, our indigenous knowledge, our spirituality, and our ways of taking care of Mother Earth. To work with us and help us. And our help is going to be is critically important if we're going to be successful in dealing with climate change, for example. Because our people took care of Mother Earth for all those years, and they know how to take care of Mother Earth in a very sustainable way. Never the colonizers came, they thought we had no knowledge and nothing to contribute. But a lot of research that's going on now, our tribe does a lot of research, is finding that the ways of our ancestors is the way we got to take care of the planet going forward and such. So we're asking, you know, the public to work with us and work with other tribes so that we can work together to heal Mother Earth. That's one thing. Now, the other part of the healing is you're talking about the other atrocities. I never approved of what happened in South Africa or to do it was an effort to do the same in Canada, and that's that truth and reconciliation. There's no such thing as reconciliation. What does reconciliation mean? You know, when you reconcile, is you take a relationship back to a time when it was good. Like a married couple, you know, they get married and 2-3 years pass and pretty soon, you know, they're bickering and they get short-tempered with each other and they start saying things and not being as discreet and pretty soon they're at odds and they say, wait a minute, man, let's reconcile. Let's bring it back to when times were good. You know, but our relationship with, for example, the church in the state of California or the federal government, when was that relationship ever good? It was never good. There's nothing for us to reconcile back. But for us, the word reconciliation, we're not interested in that. You know, that's just somebody trying to feel good, but it means nothing. We don't accept apologies either. Now, you didn't ask about that, but we don't accept apologies either. When we hear apologies, that just means, you know, well, I apologize, now will you shut up? That's all we hear. In 2015, Pope Francis in Ecuador, he apologized to the indigenous peoples of the Americas for their sins, crimes, and offenses of the church. He did not. We wrote the Pope a letter. And we said, we do not accept your apology. We learned, you know, as Catholic, when I was very young, I learned that to be forgiven for your sins, you have to confess your sins fully and completely. And then you have to do penance, and then you have to atone for your sins. If I was to go into confessional booths and give and for confession and say, I'm sorry, or I apologize, that priest would not forgive my sins. He'd say, well, you have to tell us what you did. Why did you do it? Why did you do it? How many times, etc. But why does the church expect to just give an apology, or the state of California, Governor Newsom did the same thing. He gave an apology. But they don't say what they did. They just want to give an apology and have it pass. We're not going to accept that. That's off the mark. But I'll try one more time to answer your question. So whenever there was a truth and reconciliation, we don't accept that. That was meaningless. And what they did in Germany, you know, there's laws in the books and stuff like that now where you can't deny the truth. There's laws, you know, and there's mandatory teachings in schools, and they have road signs marking some of the events there and stuff like that. I don't know that history real well, but I know at least it was an attempt, and it went much further than they have on any indigenous histories that I know of. So we're not looking to learn from that, but we see other examples of efforts, and most of them fall very short.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it was about 10 years ago when people in Santa Cruz marched from Grant Street Park to this place that ended up being called the Knoll. And there was this movement to save the Knoll. This house building company started digging there and, you know, preparing to build a bunch of houses at the end of Market Street near Isbell Drive. And as they were digging, they found remains of an indigenous boy, probably 3,000 years old. And the building stopped temporarily. And I went on a few marches there and recorded interviews and did some radio then. And I'm pretty sure you must have been there. And that happens occasionally in Santa Cruz. I think it happened again just last week at Santa Cruz High School. Some human remains were discovered. I don't know if you want to say something about that. And I mean, at the site, at the Knoll site, they eventually built all these houses anyway, which was kind of disappointing. I don't know if you have anything to say about this.
That happens a lot to that happens a lot for all indigenous tribes. I can remember one time they were building a Safeway market. They uncovered an Indian gravesite. 188 Indians, our bodies were removed. And we had to do a reburial of them somewhere else. And that was, there was such a horrible feeling. 188, all for a shop, a Safeway supermarket. I mean, you know, what's the value of the of an Indian life? What is the value of Indian history? What is the value of indigenous peoples? There is no value. It's an inconvenience. They just want to move it out of the way so they can make their money. So we're aware of Santa Cruz, and we are working with some authorities there. But we don't talk about that because it's important that we keep it confidential, because so many times people will hear about things like that, and they'll go in and try to dig it up and see if they can find some stuff that they can sell on the internet. So we try to keep all that stuff real quiet.
Well, I'm really grateful for your persistence and your honesty and your efforts. And if you have anything more you want to say about the bell removal ceremony or anything else, please do.
Well, we ask the public to join us. It's going to be available online on Facebook Live, so they can, it's going to be streamed there, so people can join it.
You've been listening to an interview with Valentin Lopez, chair of the Amamutsin Tribal Band, on the removal of the California Mission bells. The third and last bell in Santa Cruz will be removed at 3 p.m. on Saturday, August 28th, following a 1 p.m. ceremony at Mission Plaza Park. For more information, go to removethebells.org. This is KZSC 88.1 FM, KZSC.org, broadcasting from the University of California at Santa Cruz.